former Senator Bongbong Marcos nominated as standard bearer by the political party of his late father. Meanwhile, the coalition Isang Bayan and other opposition figures slam Marcos' nomination as presidential candidate. Later on in the program, we'll speak to Isang Bayan convener, attorney Howard Calleja, about how their own selection process is coming along. Presidential aspirant Manila Mayor Isko Moreno says he can work alongside vice presidential bet President Rodrigo Duterte if they win in next year's polls. And the Education Department preparing for the dry run of limited face-to-face classes. We'll discuss that with Education Undersecretary Diosdado San Antonio. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Let's begin with this story. The son of the late dictator, Ferdinand Marcos, former Senator Bongbong Marcos, being urged to seek the presidency next year by the party his father founded. Jackie Manabat covered the Kilusang Bagong Lipunan's event, and she joins us now with details. Jackie, what more can you tell us?
Carmina, there are balloons, banners, tarpaulins, and a room filled with Marcos supporters here at Binangonan Rizal today at September 24, 2021. But former Senator Bongbong Marcos did not show up here at the Kilusang Bagong Lipunan's National Convention, did not physically appear here at National Convention. This political party, Kilusang Bagong Lipunan, is founded by late dictator Ferdinand Marcos. They officially nominated the candidacy of Bongbong Marcos as their presidential candidate for the 2022 elections. And in a recorded speech played here at the convention, Marcos thanked KBL's support. Marcos was attending an online press conference Friday News Forum while the event here is ongoing in Rizal. At the online forum, Marcos said that he appreciates the nomination but clarified he has yet to decide which national post to run for the upcoming elections. He also said that he is very close to coming up with a decision. KBL National President and Ilocos Sur Provincial Board Member Efren Refanen said that whatever political party Bongbong Marcos decides to run under, they will fully support him. And aside from KBL, the Labor Party of the Philippines, Lakas Manggagawa ng Pilipinas, Partido Federal ng Pilipinas, and Kapisana ng Pamilyang Pilipino have been pushing him to run for presidency. For now, Carmina, Marcos is associated with the Nacionalista Party. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Jackie Manabat there joining us live from Rizal. Thanks, Jackie. Take care and you keep safe. Moving on, opposition figure slam Bongbong Marcos's nomination as the KBL standard bearer. The Liberal Party's Erin Tanyada said the Marcoses need to be held accountable for the atrocities committed during martial law. The opposition coalition Isang Bayan no longer surprised about Marcos's possible presidential bid. Meanwhile, the group campaign against the return of the Marcoses and martial law or karma believes Bongbong Marcos will just use the presidency to further evade responsibility for his family's crimes. Vice President Lenny Robredo still trying to unite the broader political opposition for the upcoming national elections. Robredo spokesperson, attorney Barry Gutierrez, says talks between the Vice President, Senator Manny Pacquiao, and Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Dumagoso continue, even if the two have already declared their respective presidential bids. This comes amid public clamor for Robredo to finally seek the presidency. As early as now, Gutierrez says Robredo's supporters are already preparing for her candidacy.
She's serious about the responsibility of forging a broad coalition. It's not indecisiveness. In fact, it's the exact opposite. She is very decided that this is the way to go. This is the best way to go about it. The Liberal Party has been continuously organizing. It has continuously been preparing its own, well, admittedly limited machinery. Aside from LP, in the last three months or so, there have been a lot of volunteer groups that have come forward, individual citizens that have organized themselves to push for a Lenny Robredo run. And they're also moving. So it's not as if everything is in a state of stasis, like suspended animation, while the vice president has yet to make an announcement. It's very clear to me that as soon as she makes the announcement, everything will be ready to go.
Well, 2022 presidential candidate Iscol Moreno reveals Vice President Robredo never asked him to run as her VP. This comes amid speculations there could be last-minute substitutions for Moreno's tandem with Dr. Willie Ong. Moreno also denied his original pick for running mate, Senator Grace Poe, will eventually replace Ong.
Ayoko ng chuchubibo ng buhay, ha? Diyan nga tayo nagka-loko-loko, eh. Pa-flip-flop, pabago-bago. The people needs some decisiveness. No? Yung tatakbo, hindi tatakbo, o tapos mag-switching. And nabili na yun eh. We don't want to do the same.
Meanwhile, Moreno says he can work with President Duterte if they both win the presidency and vice presidency. That's despite the recent verbal spat. But Moreno also says he will not stop the International Criminal Court from investigating Duterte's bloody war on drugs.
The rule of law will be observed under my watch. No, why not? Well, nothing. If there's nothing to hide, we can gain also some level of respect in our neighboring countries, and they makita nila that we are certain about our rules. Bakit naman hindi? Did that in Manila, war on drugs. Inuhuli namin mga suspect, dinadala namin sa husgado. Kinikilala namin yung trabaho at karapatan ng husgado at kinikilala namin yung karapatang pantao ng suspect.
President Duterte's net satisfaction rating drops from 79% in November last year to 62% in June of this year. That's according to the latest Social Weather Station survey. Results from the June 2021 survey show 75% of respondents were satisfied with Duterte's performance, while 13% said they were not. 12% say they are undecided. It's worth noting that this is a double-digit drop from Duterte's previous net satisfaction rating in November of 2020, which peaked despite the pandemic. Back then, 84% said they were satisfied, while 6% said they weren't. 9% were undecided. Former Senator Joseph Victor J.V. Ejercito seeking a comeback to the upper chamber. Our correspondent Michael Deliso joins us now with that story. Michael, go ahead.
Na hindi siya nabigyan ng ganoon ka-importansya. It's being implemented, yes. Nang mabuti nito mga nakaraang buwan, kung ako itutuloy ko ang
Mike? Back to Michael Deliso there for the rest of his story in a bit. But first, on elections, again telling lawmakers it can no longer extend voter registration due to time constraints. COMELEC Chairman Sherif Abbas made the statement during a budget hearing at the Senate today.
First of all, we would like to apologize for our polite rejection of the request. We just want to explain yung aming timeline, Sir Honor. Yung timelines po namin, talagang medyo masikip na. We really have to do it. Meron kasi kaming mga immovable dates.
Both chambers of Congress had earlier adopted resolutions urging the poll commission to extend a vote beyond the 30th deadline. This as long lines persist and registration sites amid the pandemic. The Senate even threatened to cut the COMELEC budget to compel it to extend the registration period. Okay, let's now go back to our correspondent, Michael Deliso, who's going to tell us more about former Senator J.V. Ejercito's plans to return to the Senate. Mike, go ahead.
Yes, Carmina, that's right. Former Philippine Senator Joseph Victor J.V. Ejercito has announced he will seek a Senate comeback in the 2022 elections. In a media forum, Ejercito, who authored the Senate Bill 1896 or the Universal Health Care Law, said he would continue his advocacy for better healthcare system as well as infrastructure development in the country. Ejercito, who is a member of Nationalist People's Coalition, said his inclusion in the senatorial lineup of various political parties was a factor in his decision. He admitted he is not well-funded in what he expects as a tight race due to the comeback of other senators whom he said are more popular, but he banks on his track record as a public servant, having served as a mayor from 2001 to 2010. Then he became a congressman of San Juan City and then senator. Ejercito said the possible candidacy of his half-brother, former Senator Jingoy Estrada, might also put another challenge in his bid. He said there was no discussion yet that only one of them will run for Senate seat. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Our correspondent, Michael Deliso, they're joining us on the line. Take care, Mike. Keep safe. Moving on, opposition coalition, Isambayan, still in the process of selecting its leader and complete slate for the 2022 polls. That's amid reports unity talks continue among some of the presidential aspirants. Joining us now is Isambayan convener, attorney Howard Calleja. Howie, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Howie, sorry to do this to you, but you're on mute. Kindly unmute yourself.
Am I okay?
Yeah,
There we go. Sorry po.
No worries.
And hello again, Carmina, and hello to your televiewers. Magandang hapon po. Good afternoon to everybody.
All right. I want to know about your process. Where are you in your process as we speak?
Yes, Carmina, just to clarify, no, we started a Pulso ng Bayan, which is a internal survey among our membership, which we started September 12 and will end in September 25. In this Pulso ng Bayan, we have among the questions, our issues, our capacities, but more importantly, na siguro gusto malaman ng tao, eh, nandito din po yung aming mga pinagpipilian para presidente, vice president, at 12 senators. So in the president, just to clarify, we have VP Lenny, Senator Sonny Trillanes, and Mayor Isko Moreno. And nakalagay doon na pwede rin pong isama si Senator Pacquiao at Senator Ping Lacson. Sa vice president naman, nandoon si Senator Sonny Trillanes at pwede rin isama si Senator Bam, Senator Grace, at Senator Tito Soto. While for the senators, we have 21 names listed as possible senatorial bets.
All right. Then, if that continues, as you just described, then is it that we heard from your co-convener, Eta Rosales, saying that the group is now actually divided between supporting Manila Mayor Isko Moreno and Vice President Lenny Robredo? Why is there that division, Attorney Calleja?
Wala naman na siguro that was her perception, which I would respect her perception. But there is no truth that there is a division between Isko or Lenny Camp. Until now, Isambayan has been in close communication with the Isko Camp, with the Trillanes Camp, with the Lenny Camp. So lahat po nakausap po namin. So to say that nakapag-decision na o na-narrow down na yung decision, I think it's premature at this point in time. As I said, tuloy-tuloy pa rin yung aming pulso ng bayan, and this pulso ng bayan would be taken into consideration with other data groups or data sets, which include yung track record, characteristics, humility, honesty, integrity of the individual, leadership. So lahat po yan, ipagsasama, and eventually, we are targeting, hopefully by end of the month, hopefully, tentatively, we might have our declaration or endorsement for the president. Tentatively, depends if we can have a consensus at that time. You know, Carmina, since our inception, Isambayan has grown into more than 3 million members. And alam mo naman, sa ganito kalaking grupo, hindi naman kami makakapag-decide dahil hindi naman kami authoritarian that we make our decisions. We have to consult everybody. And this 3 million members is composed of 123 organizations, 47 local chapters, 22 foreign chapters, and 12 youth chapters and organizations. So talagang we have to go back to them and see ano nga yung pulso nila, ano yung kanilang consensus. And only then we can come up with our endorsement or support and decision, because we really have to go through the process. And
how would you then
rest assured that we will achieve this process of unity with all the other candidates as well?
Attorney Caliado, you said that your group has actually grown to 3 million, but how would you then explain the perception that you've actually lost momentum, that the group has lost steam?
They were saying that, I hear that because they're saying that the candidates have already declared. But my explanation to that, Carmina, is very simple. When we announced our intended nominees back in June, remember, ang sabi nung karamihan, bakit kayo nag-a-announce isang bayan? Hindi pa naman sila nag-a-announce na sila itatakbo. Most of them are even saying that they are not even thinking of running for the election. That's why nga umatras yung iba. But now, sabi ko nga, mas maganda ngayon because mas lumapit tayo sa dream of unity. Because before, they're not even saying that they are running, but now all of them or most of them are saying they're available to run. So the first bridge on whether or not they would run or they are available to run is already crossed. Now, the next bridge on putting them together is what we are doing now. I think what is important that this...
Attorney Caliaha.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's better. Go ahead. That's important at this point. Go ahead.
Despite the announcements or the declarations of some candidates, it is very clear, and even if you talk to the candidates, they would even say that unity talks are still ongoing. So hindi sarado ang unity talks. So hindi pwedeng sabihin na wala yung steam, because the idea of unity is alive. And I think it is not about isang bayan putting together, but I think if everybody unites, then the dream of isang bayan to have a unified ticket is achieved. So I think yun ang importante. It's not about who gets the credit. It's about getting the United Democratic Forces to go and challenge the Duterte forces come May 2022. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me?
Let me ask you this, Attorney Caliaha. What if after your consult, Attorney Caliaha, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
I can hear you, but can you hear me, Attorney Caliaha?
Yes, I can hear you now. Perfect.
Right. So I was about to ask you, what if after your consultation, it proves that the 3 million strong members of Isang Bayan decide that it's going to be, let's say, Mayor Isko Moreno, that's what they want. But then in the end, Vice President Leni Robredo also decides that she's going to throw her hat into the ring. Where will that leave Isang Bayan?
Well, as I said, no, the pulso ng Isang Bayan, the survey is only one data set. So we are having this data set together with the other data sets that we are taking into consideration. But we will respect, of course, whatever the decision of the group or of the majority will decide. So as much as possible, we are, as I said, 123 organizations. If you add the chapters, we're about more than 200 members in our General Assembly. And the General Assembly will hopefully get a consensus as to who will be our candidates. Now, if the General Assembly will not be able to get a consensus, then it would be left to the 24-member convener group that will make the decision for Isang Bayan.
With all these consultations that you're conducting, Attorney Caliaha, what is your assurance that this will not lead to the possibility that your ideals might get diluted because of all these consultations that you're conducting?
Well, because, Carmina, among this, we will also present our platform of government. The platform includes over our aspirations, ideals, and plans for good government of the Philippines. So as long as the platform continues, which is part of what we will be discussing with our candidates, with our which candidates that we will endorse, I think the dilution or the watered down of our principles would not be possible. I think it will even strengthen it, because part of the program of the candidates would be the platform of government of isang bayan.
You know what's happening right now, right? There is immense pressure for Vice President Leni Robredo not just to decide, but also to announce her decision. What do you make of that pressure that the Vice President is experiencing right now?
Yeah, to us, I wouldn't. Her position is not something that we envy. As you said, the pressure is mounting, no, from all sides. However, what isang bayan is here is that we are here to heal and hear all parties, all candidates. Similarly, also with the Senate, with Vice President Leni, in whatever decision she might make. So we will, respect whatever decision she would decide, and we would give her time. Kami hindi naman namin mamadaliin siya, hindi namin ipupush, but I'm sure that in due time she will make the decision, and also in due time, isang bayan will make the proper endorsement for the proper candidate for the Filipino people.
And as you say that, you know as well that KBL has just nominated Bongbong Marcos as their standard bearer for the 2022 presidential elections. How is this going to affect the process? What do you think will be the impact of this on your selection process?
Well, ang sa akin, yung sa pagtakbo ni Bongbong Marcos, that is good news as far as the opposition and democratic forces are concerned. If you look at it, the 16 million votes of Duterte included Bongbong Marcos votes from the north. So, sa akin, that is also an additional fragmentation of the Duterte votes in addition to the, sabi nga natin, na fragment na dahil yung kanyang loyalist na si Alan Peter Cayetano, number one DDS, umalis na kay President Duterte. Si Speaker Pantaleon Alvarez at yung iba pang niyang grupo umalis na rin kay President Duterte. And if Pacquiao even runs, mai-split din niya yung boto ng Mindanao. So we look at this as former votes of President Duterte when he ran in 2016. And it shows that these votes are no longer solid for President Duterte or Sara or whoever his anointed will be, because nag-fragment na sila. Naghati-hati na sila. And that's why it is more evident or more impairment for the opposition to unite. Para sa amin, we are solid against whoever the candidate or candidates of the Duterte administration will be.
But are you going to be eventually the representation of the true opposition? Because that's the fear, that as you continuously search to unify the opposition, that it may not be the true opposition eventually. What is your answer to that?
Well, Carmina, the true opposition is subjective, no? What we are looking forward to is a leader that will respect the constitution, a leader that will respect the sovereign rights of the Philippines, a leader that will take us out from the pandemic, take us out from this economic slump, a leader that will respect civil liberties, civil rights, even domestic and international accountability, not only of corruption, but also of justice and the EJK. So, dun po, patungo tayo. We do not like to brand people as Dilawan or DDS or KBL or whatever, or loyalist or whatever. We look at everybody as Filipinos, kaya nga isang bayan. So, we look at them as where they stand and how do we bring and move forward the Philippines from 2022.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Attorney Howard Calieja there, convener of Opposition Coalition Isang Bayan. Thank you, Howie, for joining us today.
Thank you, Carmina, and good afternoon to everybody. Salamat po.
Thanks. Right from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, we'll discuss the preparations for the dry run of limited face-to-face classes here in the Philippines. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We are back. There's still a Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Former Senator Bongbong Marcos nominated as standard bearer by the political party of his late father. Meanwhile, the coalition Isambayan and other opposition figures slam Marcos's nomination as presidential candidate. And presidential aspirant Manila Mayor Isko Moreno says he can work alongside vice presidential bet President Rodrigo Duterte if they both win in next year's polls. Back with more news, the provinces of Abra and Bohol as well as Baguio City placed under general community quarantine with heightened restrictions. That's amid an uptick in COVID-19 cases in those areas. The new quarantine status will stay in effect until the end of the month. Under the stricter guidelines, dine-in services, personal care services, religious gatherings and outdoor tourist attractions will be allowed to operate at a limited capacity. Benguet had been flagged by the Octa Research Group as an area of concern.
So essential travel na tayo yung ginagawa natin. Nag-check na sa border yan, kaya yung pila namin ng mga sasakyan mahaba na.
Kung pwede po, itantan muna ang pag-travel dito sa Benguet. Itong mabilis ang pagtaas ng kaso ng COVID, for our safety din naman po.
The quarantine classification in Ilocos Norte, however, was de-escalated from modified enhanced community quarantine to general community quarantine. The Philippines recorded 17,411 new COVID-19 infections Thursday. This raises the nationwide tally to 2,434,177 more patients died, while another 14,000 recovered. The number of active cases stands at more than 165,000. Individuals barred from going outside under Alert Level 4 in Metro Manila will now be allowed to exercise outdoors. That's according to Interagency Task Force spokesperson Harry Roque. He says the IETF amended its guidelines for those aged 65 and above, below 18, as well as pregnant women and people with comorbidities. But he notes they can only exercise within the general area of their residence. The Philippine Education Department getting ready for the pilot testing of face-to-face classes in areas not considered COVID-19 hotspots. But for some teachers groups, as well as parents, it's still not safe to allow students back in classrooms. Joining us now for a discussion on this is Education Undersecretary Diosdado San Antonio. Undersecretary, good afternoon to you and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Ms. Carmina. Good afternoon to our viewers as well.
All right. So as you prepare for a dry run of face-to-face classes, at least pilot testing it, how many areas exactly are we looking at here?
We cannot provide the exact numbers yet because there's an ongoing review of the list. We'll make sure that it will be consistent with what we have provided as basic requirements, that indeed the area should be from the low-risk areas, COVID cases, not very high. And there was an agreement that we also have to do more granular assessment of the areas because our previous framework was to use the municipalities as basis for the classification. But we all agree that even within municipalities or cities, but certain barangays may have different situations. So the review is ongoing right now.
So do we take it to mean that this pilot testing may not even take off as you assess the situation, the real situation on the ground?
We've sensed that there would be some schools that will be able to be included in the list, but it may not be 100 as, originally announced maximum of 120 from private schools, but as it is, it could be lesser than or fewer than 100.
So let's backtrack a bit here. Why even go to a more granular approach now when that could have been the approach from the very beginning?
we understand that that could be a way to do it, but during that time when we were preparing for the face-to-face, the data that we have, I think from the Department of Health is on the basis of towns and cities instead of barangays, because there are certain factors that may not be true in barangays, like availability of health facilities, etc. So my understanding is the database is really at the national level, is at the levels of towns and cities.
All right. And as you prepare, you know, we talked to the Teachers Dignity Coalition a couple of days back, and they said that they weren't even consulted with this plan of the DepEd. How would you explain that?
My understanding is the preparation of the guidelines has been fully consulted with the stakeholders. We work with the Department of Health, the professional organizations who are experts in children's health are also on board, and our fellow teachers are consulted by our field offices.
Yes. And they were consulted, and what did they tell you? That they're ready? That they're willing?
Part of the process was like the schools are required to, in fact, coordinate with the local government counterparts, parents, and definitely teachers. And the lists submitted to us by the regional directors came from this list initially prepared by the division offices. So we expected that the schools themselves took note of the preferences and sentiments of the stakeholders who will be on board when we implement the limited face-to-face.
Okay, when you do implement it, how easy will it be for these schools to halt the operations in case there is an outbreak, in case the low-risk area suddenly becomes moderate risk or even high risk?
My understanding of our guidelines, it covers decisions on when to revert back to the home-based distance learning in cases where there would be a sudden surge in the cases of COVID patients in certain areas. So that would be covered by the implementing guidelines that will be issued, signed jointly by Secretary Leonor Liling Magdolis-Briones and Secretary Duque of the Department of Health.
Part of the parameters that you're looking at, Undersecretary, will it be also about how many of the teachers, the school personnel, for example, are actually vaccinated when you open up these schools again to the learners?
There's an ongoing discussion and on the matter of requiring teachers to be vaccinated before they can join the limited face-to-face implementation. And during the recent meeting we had with DOH and the experts, we agreed that the IATF has to make a final decision in this matter. Of course, in the Department of Education, all of us feel that vaccination should be highly encouraged. But we understand that there are certain people who, on account of certain beliefs, would not want to be vaccinated. And of course, I think it has been made very clear by the Department of Justice that compulsory vaccination is something that we cannot do.
Yeah. Okay, that's one aspect. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about is making sure that the teachers are well equipped for those who will continue on with blended learning. Do we have any figure or any status you could share with us as to how many teachers have received laptops, for example, internet connectivity in some areas? Go ahead.
I don't have the numbers for the laptops distributed, but among those that we implemented, where even the authority for principals to make teachers use at home the computer units we have distributed, initially intended for schools. So in a way, these units were loaned to our fellow teachers doing online distance learning. in terms of the preparation of our teachers for the home-based distance learning facilitation, we continue to provide them capacity building, making sure that they are provided updates. My understanding was a week or two before the opening of the school year this year, we launched the webinar for our fellow teachers, particularly focusing on those that will do make full use of gadgets in providing support to the learners. And relative to the loads, we have procured SIM cards for our fellow teachers that could be used to communicate with the families, and at the same time, a separate load as well for their participation in our capacity building activities.
How would you differentiate this school year from last school year in terms of preparedness?
As has been shown by the first 2 weeks of the school year's run, it appears that we were really able to incorporate lessons learned from the implementation of the home-based learning last year. I've been going around for the last 2 weeks, and I feel so reassured that the principals are really on top of efforts to make sure that the delivery of the learning resources would be more efficient. In fact, yesterday, I was in Dasmariñas. I was informed by the principal that they distributed the learning modules for those doing it using the printed modules for the whole quarter. If last year we could do like a weekly thing because the reproduction was ongoing, this was a case that really assured me that they were able to come up with more responsive approaches. And the other thing she said was, we are not even sure if there would be some like restrictions for parents to be coming to school. So it's better that since we were ready with all the resources for the first quarter, we might as well give them to the families.
But is that across the board or just this one school that you...
Yeah, I'm citing one example of an area that has demonstrated an improvement on how things are. I mean, this is a firsthand experience I had yesterday as I visited that particular Dasmariñas 2 Central School.
Of course, you know, Undersecretary, we're talking about the here and now. We're talking about being responsive and all that. But you know what experts are talking about already? They're talking about the lost years of these learners' education and how it's going to affect their productivity in the future. And a couple of weeks back, I was talking to a Congresswoman, Stella Kimbo, and then in that conversation, she said that it is imperative for the country to have a national assessment to see what's happening to our learners. Is that something that the Education Department is going to do?
Absolutely. We are in the process of preparing a way to really determine extent of learning loss or learning gain, if ever there is, so that we can really make a proper adjustment on the way we will be able to do things once hopefully the face-to-face blended learning with the face-to-face component becomes real. Because it's really very difficult to do a big-scale assessment when children are not in school. So among the things that would be done when a limited face-to-face is allowed and is implemented is really being able to do an assessment of the extent of learning loss or gain that has happened during the previous school year particularly. And I think the Department of Education really attempted to find ways to make sure that the children would have some experiences of learning the most essential competencies required so that they can really continue to learn for life.
But what interventions is the Department of Education prepared to make to sort of close the gap that will affect the productivity of these learners in the future? Because, you know, even our Secretary Carl Chua has already said it's going to affect the productivity in the future. and overall, you know, the country's productivity, right? So this early, what interventions is the education department sort of seeing to close this gap?
We actually are ready to implement another way to capacitate our fellow teachers, focusing on like assessment, implementing assessment mechanisms that are very relevant to the need for the learners to really demonstrate deeper understanding of knowledge of things that are expected to be learned by them, and assessments that will really allow us to know whether the 21st century skills expected to be learned by the youngsters are really being learned. So we work with partners from outside the Department of Education to come up with intervention. And we feel that indeed, when we collaborate with the experts outside the Department of Education, we are able to come up with the intervention that really has been informed by more experts outside of our own agency.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Undersecretary Diosdado San Antonio there of the Education Department, we appreciate you coming to the show and joining us this afternoon. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless you too. We're going to take a break now. Still ahead, the Philippine Central Bank keeps interest rates at record lows to spur economic recovery. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We'll be right back. More news. Philippine police released CCTV footage that could provide leads to the death of young Filipino contemporary artist Brihon Son. Rafi Santos gives us details.
Police have released security footage showing Brihon Son and Julian Ong Pin outside their rented room in La Union on September 18. According to the police, it is clear from the video that the pair had been arguing and were drinking alcohol sometime before Hon Son was found dead. An earlier forensic report stated her case of death as asphyxia, with Ong Pin claiming she had killed herself, which the victim's family denies. PNP Chief Guillermo Eliazar says the security footage and testimony from the hotel staff were now part of the investigation.
That is just one of the videos na nakita sa labas. Remember that the CCTV ay nasa labas, hindi naman siya nasa loob. So what happened inside ay wala pa tayong conclusion.
Eliazar says Ong Pin told investigators he forced through a bathroom door to get to Bree, leaving him with wounds on both his arms and back. No signs of struggle found on Honson's body, except for a ligature mark on her neck.
One thing that they explained is that pataas kasi yung markings nung ligature. So pataas siyang paganon. So most likely, talagang sa pataas siya. Pero yun nga, pwede naman kasi pataas na nakahang, pwede rin pataas na inangat, di ba? So all of these things are being considered during the conduct of the investigation.
However, lawyers representing the victim's family are contesting the statement, saying forensics found other marks on Honson's body. The police say they are not yet ruling out foul play in the young artist's death. Meanwhile, the NBI has also conducted its own autopsy on Honson's cadaver and are now awaiting its results. They've also begun talking to the victim's friends and relatives as part of a parallel probe requested by Honson's family. Rafi Santos, ABS-CBN News.
In business, President Rodrigo Duterte signs a law setting up a tax regime for Philippine offshore gaming operators, or POGOs. Under the measure, 60% of revenues collected from offshore gambling will be used for the universal health care program. 20% will go to the enhancement of medical facilities, while the remaining 20% will be allotted for sustainable development goals. Senator Pia Cayetano earlier said POGOs yielded 6.4 billion pesos in collections back in 2019. POGOs were suspended in 2020 along with other non-essential businesses when the COVID-19 lockdown was imposed. The Philippine Central Bank keeps key interest rates at record lows in a bid to spur economic recovery. It maintained the interest rate for overnight reverse repurchase facility at 2%. Interest rates on overnight deposit and lending facilities were also capped at 1.5% and 2.5%. The central bank also revised the country's 2021 inflation forecast to 4.4%. That's up from the previous 4.1% estimate. But it asserts inflation expectations remain firmly aligned with its projections.
On balance, the Monetary Board is of the view that prevailing monetary policy settings remain appropriate given the manageable inflation environment and uncertain growth outlook. The Monetary Board reiterates that, together with appropriate fiscal and health interventions, keeping a steady hand on the BSP's policy levers will allow the momentum of economic recovery to gain more traction by helping boost domestic demand and market confidence.
And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us today and the whole week this week. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.